Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Justin and Trisha Davis.
Honest conversations about life, love, and leadership.
Welcome to season four.
Well, today is the start of May, and you may know this. Justin and I think last year we weren't quite as aware that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And we are always so grateful for this platform on our podcast to talk about life, love, and leadership. And in that, I think in all three of those categories, mental health plays a role in all of those. And so today we're, you know, just going to do a deep dive, as kind of we always do, of mental health. I'm laughing as I'm saying mental health because I love my husband so much, but you cannot see that when I'm talking, he likes to, like, I don't even say you like to, you just really don't even
I don't
know
even
you're
realize
doing,
I'm
it.
Doing it. I mouth the words that she is saying as she's saying them, even though I really don't know what she's going to say. I just am talking alongside her. And so I realized that I was doing it. So then I started, like, pressing my lips together really hard to prevent myself from mouthing the
words. Which sometimes is an indication you have something important to say. So
sometimes it's just an indication that I'm an idiot. So I mean, we speak, you know, 20 times a year together, and I go back and try to rewatch the message just to make sure it's good or it's, you know, relevant. And I see myself, as Trisha's teaching, just mouthing the words. And I'm like a little ventriloquist with myself. Except the opposite, right? A ventriloquist doesn't move his mouth. And I do. So anyway.
Well, you're still cute doing it. But as we kind of launch into this conversation, if you've been around the Let's Get Real podcast, you have heard on previous episodes, previous seasons, where we've talked about our own personal journey with mental health and in different seasons. And so as we were praying and talking about what type of conversation we want to have today as it pertains to mental health is more on the side specifically of anxiety. And I think the first half is if you struggle with anxiety, and then the second half is how do you love someone well in your life that is struggling with anxiety, whether it's a best friend or an adult kid, or maybe you are a teenager listening and one of your parents struggle with anxiety. We want to give you a little bit of a framework of just how to encourage one another when someone is in that space of struggle.
Well, I think, you know, the heart behind what we try to do with this podcast and even with this specific topic is, you know, when we first got married and were, you know, new in ministry, my mom and my grandmother struggled with mental health. My grandmother was actually in several mental hospitals. I was too young really to remember it, but that was a reality of my mom's life. And so mental health, I was aware of it, but almost as, it was almost like it was seen as the opposite of faith. So like if you had mental health struggles, there was a deficiency in your spiritual maturity.
So was it like framed that she was sick?
Crazy.
Oh,
yeah, crazy.
Also, like a negative, not even like a compassionate, but
no, Mama's crazy. Mm. And so my mom had this fear of becoming crazy. And, you know, she would have panic attacks. I think she was bipolar, my grandmother. And so there was always this awareness of this aspect of kind of our family history, but it was not seen in a compassionate way. It was seen more in a deficiency. Like this person is weak, or this person is incapable, or this person is disabled. And there are different variations of mental health disorders,
sure.
Right? There's chemical, there's, you know, biological, there's seasonal. And so I don't want to like lump every mental health disorder in with the same, in the same category, because I know there's different variations, but I think this has always been just a part of my story because obviously we struggled in our marriage and personally with mental health stuff. We've seen some of our kids struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I want to put a megaphone up to dispel the stigma or dispel the idea that somehow if you have anxiety or you feel depressed or you struggle with depression or suicide ideation, that somehow it's an indictment mm-hmm. on your relationship with God, or that God didn't make you whole, or God is incapable of healing you. And I think the weight of mental health is one thing. Then carrying the shame or the disappointment that you feel like God or other Christians may have of you is a completely other weight, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm excited to be able to talk about this, because I think a lot of times people suffer in silence, or they don't feel like they can share what they're struggling with because they don't want someone to be disappointed in them. And so if you are struggling, I just want to say, we're not disappointed in you, and you're not less than.
Right. That's so good. I mean, amen, and let's pray. It's difficult because it's so personal, and it is multifaceted, and it is multi-layered, and what plays into it is just even our personality. Are we very introverted? Are we extroverted? Do we come from a healthy family? Do we come from a toxic family? There's all of these different just actual life circumstances that you have to sift through before you even really recognize, oh, this isn't just seasonal, or this isn't just because this happened. I'm really struggling. I had a close friend of mine recently, just yesterday, we were having this conversation, and she just said, I just feel so anxious. And I believe if I had had that conversation 15 years ago, I would have, I'm not really sure, probably, can I pray for you? Which I obviously believe in the power of prayer. I didn't know how to hold space for someone who would say that they were struggling. And I recognize now being informed and doing trauma work myself, you and I being highly invested in understanding mental health issues as pastors and coaches, that oftentimes the biggest step to acknowledging the struggle is acknowledging the struggle. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have like a history of acknowledging I'm struggling, and then it's not received well, or the space isn't held well. And so we kind of bury ourselves in it, and like, I am never telling anybody that again. How would you encourage someone who's like been struggling, and that's their journey? Like, they've shared before, but it's kind of blown up in their face. Because wouldn't you say that inviting somebody in is one of the first steps when dealing with anxiety to begin to fight your way out of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just, I think there's nervousness, like, you know, you're going to Disney and you're going to get on, you know, a big roller coaster. There's anxiety, there's nervousness, like there's like the thrill, right? So there's anxiety you feel before a test. There's anxiety or nervousness that you may feel before a job interview. Like, there's emotions that God has given us that help us prepare, or they help us cope, or they help us, you know, we get adrenaline that enables us to push past what we thought our limits were. But I think the type of anxiety that we're talking about is this idea or this feeling about an outcome that we're not in control of. And that could be in a relationship. It could be in your job. It could be with a child. And that feeling doesn't leave. It just piles on top of itself. Mm-hmm. And I think if that feels familiar, then I think you're not alone and you're not crazy. You know, 1 in 5 adults say that they struggle with anxiety at some level. And 1 in 5 youth age 13 to 18 express mental health disorder of some kind. Mm-hmm. And so I think recognizing that you aren't alone helps you get out of the tunnel of despair that you might feel if you have panic attacks, if you do feel anxious. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a common practice that you and I have adopted in our marriage, and we don't always do this perfectly, but we say to one another, I'm feeling super anxious right now.
Yeah.
Or I don't know why, I just feel so uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for both of us, at separate times, we felt compelled to keep that to ourselves, either to not burden the other person, or because I don't know if you've ever been sick and like you get in the shower, like you're you don't feel good. You wake up, you don't feel good. You get in the shower and you try to like talk yourself into feeling good. Like I'm just, my head doesn't hurt. I just need to take a shower. Yeah. I just need a cup of coffee. Like you try these mental approaches to try to tell yourself that you're not sick and you need to stay in bed for the day. I think you can do the same thing with anxiety, and you can kind of try to talk yourself out of it. And it's in that moment that I think is it's most important to invite somebody in.
Mm-hmm. And then the physical manifestation of it. We've got a couple of us in our large family that struggle with anxiety. And for two of them, it manifests in a physical response of not being able to breathe, like legit feeling that panic attack anxiety that has led to a panic attack. And there is a visceral physiological response that is going on. And what we have recognized is even in those moments, it's so important to know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
And having someone come alongside you to say, okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's sit together. Learning how to de-escalate in that moment. Oftentimes, it's so important to have someone around you that can help you navigate that without feeling disappointed in yourself, less than there's something wrong with you. It's more learning what's the framework that you need to get to a place of stability.
Yeah, and I think for me, I didn't realize probably until a few years ago how much I had normalized the anxiety levels that I was tolerating or living in. I had just kind of learned to function in that. And it was a very unhealthy thing. So it caused high blood pressure, weight gain. Like there were, it started to affect my physical and relational health. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's like a cycle that feeds on itself to where you feel stressed, you feel anxious, you don't know how to articulate it. So you begin to try to escape it. And you can escape it in a lot of different ways. Spending, you can escape it with food. There's a number of unhealthy ways to try to escape it. And it wasn't until I began to get help that I realized, oh my gosh, like that was a huge weight that I didn't even realize, because you kind of gradually grow into it in some mm-hmm. respects.
Mm-hmm.
How did you decide that you were able to be vulnerable with me, with other people, when it came to anxiety and maybe some fear and uncertainty that you were feeling?
I honestly learned from someone very close to me who had a full-on anxiety attack. She had faced a rather traumatic event, and it was her response to that event. So I was called and said, can you come over and just be with her? And so I went over there, and watching her in such a state was soul-crushing. But then seeing her honesty and her willingness to invite me in and come alongside her and just be with her and watch her be able to, you know, like I said earlier, get to a place of stability. I learned so much from her in that moment of, it's almost like having an asthma attack and then looking at that person and saying, well, just breathe better. Well, of course that person would want to breathe better. They're grasping mm-hmm. for air. And that's what I learned from her, of just that invitation is part of like the inhaler to our heart, mind, and soul. It's inviting someone in to come alongside you, I didn't really do anything other than remind her that she's not alone. And I'm sure beyond our ability, if you know, you are listening and you are a medical physician or, you know, work in the psychoanalytical world, you are much more, you know, able to encapsulate what we're talking about. But why we bring these topics up, it's because we see them at that level that everybody else experiences them. And so me experiencing that with her just showed me the power of invitation. So that's where I learned it from somebody else's experience.
And one of the things that I feel like has been helpful for me as I've recognized when I am feeling anxious, when I am feeling stressful, I do try to articulate it. But then also what I've recognized, and I was just talking to Trish about this last night, we went out for a walk and our dogs were stressful. We went out for a walk in our new neighborhood. We just moved a few weeks ago. And anyway, that's a different story for a different time. But I was telling Trish about how I recognize that I just make this like really mean looking face when I don't even realize that I'm doing it. And one of the casualties, I think, to unconfessed or unrecognized anxiety in my life has been the projection onto the people that I love the most. And so if I'm feeling stressed financially, I project scarcity onto, you know, the people in our house. If I'm feeling stressed from a work standpoint, I project, you know, grumpiness or, you know, like I want to, you know, make sure everything is clean. Like there's certain aspects of control that I try to take, because I think that at its core essence is that anxiety makes you feel like you're out of control. Mm-hmm. You can't control your stress level. You can't control outcomes. And so for me, how I negatively express that is I try to control people, or I try to control spending, or I try to control outcomes and things that I already know that I do have control of. And so maybe for you, as you're listening, are there aspects of your life where you haven't addressed or identified the anxious thoughts or, you know, the nervousness or the uncertainty of an outcome, and you're projecting that mm-hmm. onto people you love the most, and maybe you don't even realize it until, mm-hmm. you know, I just kind of confess. Trisha's nodding her head way too much during this little segment here.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I think you articulated with what all of us know, if you, as the listener, struggle with anxiety, or you have someone in your relational sphere that struggles with anxiety, you would want to go to this notion that just don't control anything. Let go, man. Just be one with the wind. But that's not good advice either. It's not about not being in control in any way, shape, or form. It's living in the reality of what you can't control and what you can control. And that takes humility to have that conversation. Justin mentioned we moved, and we've moved a lot in our 28, are we married 29 years or 28?
29 years. Guys, I want to give you a little stat. So from the time that I was in kindergarten until I was a senior in high school, we moved 17 times, all in the same town. Well, not all in the same town. We moved, but after fifth grade, it was all in the same town.
You may have just made someone like put their coffee down or pull over on the side of the road because they've lived in the same house their whole life.
Very low income. And so we never owned a house until I was in college, or maybe graduated from college. And so we would just move because we couldn't afford the place we live, or the landlord kicks out, or whatever. And then when Trish and I got married, we've moved 11 times or 12 times maybe in 29 years.
I think
I've moved like 30 times.
Some of them in the first couple of years were, we moved from
an cockroach hotel to a mouse hotel.
We've moved a lot. So I'm just saying, I've become an expert in not just moving, but in myself and how I respond. So I knew I couldn't control everything. There was going to be moments where it was going to be crazy, but I could control the cadence of being aware of what my capacity was walking into that situation. And oftentimes our anxiety is triggered by the expectations we place on ourselves or the expectations we think people are placing on us, and we can't do it, we can't measure up, and we feel overwhelmed, and that overwhelmness. And this plays out often in arguments. Yeah. We get into an argument and you're just like amped and you feel overwhelmed. You don't know how to do it. Sometimes it's through traumatic events. Sometimes it's, you know, the situation or just circumstances of it just being an overwhelming experience. And so what I was recognizing about myself, this is even prior to the move, because one of my kids started doing it, is I have been doing this sigh, like a really deep sigh, which
I didn't want to say anything, but yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but there was a sigh and a follow-up complaint. I'm so tired. I'm so blah, 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 all this thing. And so I knew going into the move, it was going to be tired. I was going to be exhausted. My kids weren't going to run at the same pace as I do. I'm a highly organized person. Now, if you were to ask me to cook, all my kids can cook me out of the kitchen. So I tried to set realistic expectations, and my goal was not to sigh and complain my way through the move. I give myself a solid B minus. I had apologized to my kids a couple times. But I couldn't control everything during that move. But I could control what I was willing to empower myself with. And I empowered myself with the knowledge that this was going to be a triggering event if I didn't go through it with realistic expectations.
So good. And I know you didn't plan this, but you just gave me a nice little segue into kind of a point that I wanted to make that I kind of wrote down, is that anxiety can be triggered from the outside, but it has to be addressed and fought from the inside. Mm. So there's external circumstances that can trigger our anxiety, but we can't count on someone else to solve it for us. There's this passage of scripture in Psalm 139, and I don't know that it's ever, not ever, but I don't know that I've ever used it in the context of mental health, because it's like this prayer, this very intimate prayer that David prays, but it says this: search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. And so here you have King David, you have a man after God's own heart, you have a guy who has, you know, conquered the Philistine Goliath as a kid, like he is a war hero, and he's feeling anxious. And if you look at the context of this passage, he's getting hunted down. He's hiding in a cave. So there's external circumstances that is causing his anxiety. But then what does he say? Search me, O God. So there's this internal work that has to be done. Like there's this acknowledgement that he has to make. Like for you, this move is going to trigger anxiety in me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to acknowledge it and do the work ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that I don't spew over everybody that is moving alongside with me, which I appreciate. And for the most part, we did good.
Yeah. And to our first point, I shared that with our entire family. Right.
She didn't really have to. We all knew, but
they knew. And so just confessing that I couldn't control how they responded. I couldn't control how the move would go in every single facet. But what I paid attention in realistic expectations of what I could control. And then I had to choose it. And so that's a very surface kind of overview. If you struggle with anxiety, they sound really simple. Just tell somebody and, you know, pay attention. But those really are game changers to begin. If you live with anxiety, learning how to manage it, finding healing from anxiety, for some that happens through medication, for some it happens through deep trauma work that you may not even be aware of. As always, we are huge believers in counseling. We love our counselors. It's an important part of the work. But the hard part is we can't put our counselors in our pocket to like be with us every single minute of the day or every single time that we struggle. So that's why it's so important to empower yourself to go, okay, I can't control everything, but I can empower myself with healthy next steps.
Let me ask you a question. As you have navigated this journey, and obviously there's been greater seasons of anxiety, the closing of the church, some of the trauma that we've gone through, you know, different aspects, our marriage imploding, things like that. So those are like peak level, right? But just on the day-to-day level, what are some things, I'm not asking you to brag on me, but kind of, but no, what are some things that I have done or that I, you know, that you have needed from me to help navigate some of those seasons for you?
How you quantified that is big T trauma, small T trauma. So those were some big T trauma moments that actually those big T trauma moments are so obvious. So you almost give yourself permission to either, I don't want to say be in your feels very elementary, but you're not disappointed or surprised. But it's the little T traumas, and then it's just the little hurts in life that catch you off guard. And you don't know, am I allowed to feel this way? Or you feel frustrated of, why am I responding this way? I think you mentioned a majority of them. You are a very safe person to me. You don't take personal what is personal. We've said that a lot on this podcast. There are times where I respond in an unkind way or just in a way that's outside of my normal demeanor. And rather than you being like put off by me, you've learned my own, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, the intricacy of how my brain and heart work. Like you've become a master of knowing my heart and mind, in that you have been you've been intentional with that, not with a means to control the struggle that I'm in, but to really understand. It's kind of like a baby's cry. When you bring a baby home, they have no language other than a cry. And then you learn what is I'm in pain cry, what is I'm a hungry cry. And you've become a master of hearing my heart cry.
I think that's important because, you know, if you are married, you know, one of the objectives of the podcast, as Trish said it from the beginning, is how to help your spouse or somebody that you love through anxiety. And I think not trying to fix it is one of the first steps. Like you can be present and you can hold space, but you can't fix that for them, right? And so I think it makes the person, I know this from personal experience, if I'm feeling anxious and I articulate it and then someone tries to fix it, it makes me feel like, well, you see me as deficient, or you see me as broken, or you see me as incapable.
Right. Like, dude, really?
Yeah.
Just do this.
So I think there is an importance there of your presence is way more important than performance. Your presence is way more important than solutions. Sometimes if you're struggling with a panic attack or just an anxious season, just having someone listen and see you and, you know, acknowledge, hey, I understand what you're going through, or I see what you're going through, without the expectation of get your crap together. Mm-hmm. You know, now that you've told me, snap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a huge disconnect in our marriage, you know, in the
oh
early
my gosh,
parts of
yes.
our marriage, because I had a group of people that I worked for called the church, and I wanted Trish to be put together and presentable at all times, even though she was a mom of three young kids and, you know, we had no money, and they are sometimes our middle son Elijah was sick a lot. But you know, we don't have time for you to be anxious right now. Just get it together, because we have to go to this meeting or go to this dinner or go to this lunch. Mm-hmm. And so I think giving someone permission to be where they are, not necessarily stay where they are,
right,
because that's not healthy either, but to be where they are without the expectation of get it together and fix it.
Mm-hmm. An analogy that always helps me quantify what you just said is we're talking about the pinnacle of anxiety, where reason has gone out the door. There is maybe that, like we talked about, visceral response, physiological response. What they need is, it's like they're drowning in water, and they need you to throw them a safety line, and they need you to reel them to the shore. And that's what we're trying to quantify, is how do you give someone that lifeline and pull them in to a place of safety? Because that's the win, that they feel safe. But it's their work to do from that point on if they're going to figure out how to not get back in that space. Or for me, it's interesting when Justin and I look back at our life, I have lived a no regret life. Meaning I've tried a lot of different things, and I've always been like, okay, we're going to do this. Okay, I'm in. Let's try it. And I'm 100% all in, and things have been super successful. There have been things that have been big failures, but I don't have any regrets. But because you and I have lived in these really big moments, I did not recognize the through line of mental health issues that I've always struggled with. And I didn't know. We weren't given that language when we were kids. And definitely the first 15 years of ministry, we didn't talk about mental health at all. And so I recognized, for me, some of the work I've had to do is recognizing that for myself and then deciding, like, how am I going to get help? So I take medication daily, and I will always be on medication, and I'm not embarrassed by it. I've embraced it. And I want to encourage other people that medication isn't always the answer. So we can medicate ourselves and not figure out some deep work that we have to do. But I think even that, you and I could have said, dude, we've been doing this wrong for so long. There's no way we can get it right now. And if you're in that place where you just feel like you've tried different things, or you've just been thumbed down in it for so long, I just want to encourage you to keep trying. Whether that keep trying is for you personally, or the keep trying is for a relationship that just feels difficult. Maybe you feel like you've been stiff-armed, or you feel like you've failed that person so many times because you don't know how to deal with their mental health issues. It's a struggle. And it's not black and white. It's difficult.
Yeah.
But I think what you and I have learned, that intentionality always wins out. The more intentional we become about ourselves and having agency over ourselves allows us to be the healthiest version to be intentional with others.
And I just want to say, you know, thank you, Trish, for your vulnerability, but also want to remind every person that's listening is God is as concerned with your mental health as he is your spiritual growth, right? So God cares about this aspect of your life, not to judge you or condemn you or to come down on you, but God created us to be a reflection of him and to know him deeply. And sometimes I've noticed this in my own life, that it's through that mental health journey that I connect with God in deeper ways. And so rather than seeing this as some type of deficiency in you, maybe you could look at it as an opportunity to acknowledge, to share, to invite someone in, but then also to relate to God in a deeper way, that knowing that God cares about this aspect of your life and he wants you to be mentally and emotionally and spiritually healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's not a sentence that he's imposed on you or a punishment that he's given you if you struggle with this.
That is a picture of empowerment. If I could close this conversation down, all of this is about empowerment. You get power in being able to live fully known and fully loved. You get empowered by being able to be honest with
your struggles. You get empowered when you surround yourself with healthy people in healthy opportunities to grow. So wherever you're at, if you're in a good place and you've been shaking your head the whole time and amening like, I got you or I get you, that's awesome. If this has been such a place of contention in a relationship, I just want to encourage you. You're not alone. You're not alone in this, and we're not going to get it perfect. Justin and I could probably do another podcast of how not to love each other when you're in a bad place. But what we know is God is a good God, and he doesn't have this life for us dangling over here to the side, hoping we find it or hoping we get completely healed and 100% before we can start living our best life. It's in our weakness that he's our strength. And 30 years into our marriage relationship and all the crazy that we've been through, it's just this reminder that God, he is such a good God, and he is not bound by time or space or circumstances. He's able to help us find breakthrough in any season. And so we hope that today was a small little encouragement to love yourself well, because God loves you so much, and to love others well, that he's going to empower you to love others just as he loves you.